It's long been a feature of American life to complain about how little Congress does, but Congress has had some major bursts of activity through history. Take note in particular of the middle 60s. In back-to-back years, Congress passed the Wilderness Act, civil rights legislation, the Voting Rights Act, and Medicare. There was certainly some interdependence on some of those issues, and a documentary film points up that connection. The Power to Heal, Medicare, and the Civil Rights Revolution has aired on PBS. It will be shown Saturday at 11 at the Arcata Minor Theater in Humboldt County. There's a question and answer session afterward. We get a preview from two people who support Medicare or something like it for all Americans. Dr. Corinne Frugoni is a family physician based in Eureka. Thank you for joining us on The Exchange today.
Thank you for having us.
We also have with us Susan Rogers. Dr. Susan Rogers, a retired internal medicine specialist and the president-elect, so therefore taking office in 2021, of the Physicians for a National Health Program, PNHP. Dr. Rogers, welcome to you.
Well, thank you for asking me to be on.
And let me get a sense from each of you in turn, and we'll start with you, Dr. Frugoni. Do you feel like with trying to push for a more comprehensive national health care system that it's, I don't know, two steps forward and two steps back?
No, I would say it's two steps forward and one step back, or maybe one and a half steps back. I've been working on this issue since 1989 when I joined Physicians for a National Health Program, and I have never seen such public support and understanding of what improved Medicare for All actually means.
Dr. Rogers, how about your perspective on this?
Well, having worked at a safety net hospital system in Chicago for almost my entire career, I have seen the ravages that not having insurance does to people. They present late in the stages of their diseases, where often there's not many options about what to do. But now I think the lack of insurance and the whole idea that people are underinsured has affected more and more people who used to be okay, and now they are having unsurprised medical bills. They can't afford their care. They're going without. So that it's affected more and more people, this whole fragmented, profit-driven system that we have, that we have to have something else that works, and that would be Medicare for All.
Corinne Frugoni, are you impressed by the fact that the phrase itself, Medicare for All, seems to be picking up some speed? It is uttered pretty much daily on the presidential campaign trail this year.
Yes, and there are many interpretations, so I hope we get a chance to explain the differences. Medicare for All really does mean everybody in and nobody out. And once Medicare was implemented in the mid-1960s, as you mentioned, it really made a huge impact on people 65 and over, and also on people with major disabilities. We forget that Medicare does include people with disabilities.
Not just over the age of 65.
No, so it actually includes quite a few people in the United States.
So what is the total enrollment in Medicare at this point? I mean, given that we have such a large 65-plus population and the population, as you point out, of disabled people. Does either one of you know?
I don't know the total number in Medicare now, but knowing that the population is aging, those numbers are probably going up as we speak.
All right. So, Dr. Rogers, let me stick with you because I want to move into the topic of racism in healthcare. And I would presume, working in the Chicago area, that you've probably been exposed to a bit more of this than in an area like in Humboldt County, where there just isn't much diversity. I mean, talk about the disparities that you have seen over the years.
Well, if you look at the metrics that relate to healthcare, there's no question that minorities, especially blacks in this country, have for years been subjected to inequities in healthcare. And a lot of this really stems from the segregation that is in this country. Even after Reconstruction ended, there was driven by racism, by Jim Crow laws, and even federal housing policies, like with the FHA and redlining. The GI Bill didn't give mortgages to black GIs. So that the segregation has created the groundwork, I think, for the inequities that that are there in a lot of different areas, inequities in education, community services, and healthcare is probably one of the more vital ones, because if you're not healthy, you can't function, and you can't do anything to help yourself if your primary issue is being healthy. So that in Chicago, there are so many areas of what we call concentrated poverty, where over 40% of that area lives under the federal poverty level. And in communities like that, hospitals are closing. There aren't pharmacies. There aren't grocery stores where you can buy fresh food. The schools are inadequate. So you've got all these factors, and you're creating a perfect soup where people just don't do well on a variety of levels, including health care. And one thing we have to remember is that Black poverty is different from white poverty, because more Black people live in areas of what we call concentrated poverty, and that's what I just referred to, 40% of that group is under the federal poverty level, whereas white people who are poor often live in more diverse communities. And of all the people who are poor, 55% of poor Black people live in concentrated poverty, whereas with white America, it's less than 5%. So whites, even though they are poor, often still have access to some health care. They have access to other things that communities offer, like grocery stores, education, pharmacy, recreation activities. So that's why the healthcare inequities are just so pronounced with minorities in this country.
Healthcare and civil rights, the joint topics here on the Jefferson Exchange. Dr. Susan Rogers is the president-elect of Physicians for National Health Programs, so we're talking also about the idea of national healthcare, Medicare for all. We also have with us Dr. Corinne Frugoni, who's a family physician in Humboldt County. You can join the conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Corinne Frugoni, how did the airing or the screening of the Power to Heal come about? I see it's Healthcare for All California and Physicians for National Health Program and Black Humboldt are all partners in this screening.
Yes, PNHP, Physicians for National Health Program, has started a program where every month they focus on one aspect of healthcare in this country. And February was focused on racial inequities. And we decided as our local group, the single-payer group, which consists of Healthcare for All and the local Physicians for a National Health Program, to co-sponsor with Black Humboldt, a local organization, showing Power to Heal, because it does emphasize how the civil rights movement, and Johnson in particular, really pushed to have Medicare desegregate the hospitals, because in mid-1960s, less than half of the nation's hospitals served both Black and whites equally, and in the South, a third of the hospitals wouldn't even allow Black people into the emergency room.
So lest anybody think that the civil rights legislation was in one test tube and Medicare was in another, the fact is there was quite a bit of shared DNA there.
Yes, there was. And when Medicare funds were, when there was a threat of holding Medicare funds to hospitals, the hospitals all of a sudden listened and decided to start desegregating. But it went down to the last minute before Medicare was actually enacted, because there was so much resistance.
When you look back at things like the Power to Heal, which covers that period in history in the mid 60s, do you think we're still having some of the same arguments, Corinne? I mean, in the sense of, you know, the whole sense of, you know, Medicare being a socialist thing, which was how it was derided back then.
That has been a scare tactic. It's not I don't think socialism is such a bad word, but, you know, if you think that healthcare is a right and that everyone should have equal access to healthcare, it really benefits everyone, not just Blacks, but whites, and any person of color, documented, undocumented, because bacteria don't care if you're rich or poor. They will spread themselves around and can cause illness across all strata. And we need a healthcare system that serves everyone equally. As long as we have a two- or three-tiered system, certain people will get better care than other people. Certain people will have more access. I mean, I have patients who've come to me and get a divorce so that they could qualify for Medicaid, and other people who've stayed in jobs that they don't like in order to keep their insurance. And then there's the whole issue of the uninsured and the underinsured, which covers many millions in this country. And people are going bankrupt. 60% of bankruptcies in this country are due to medical debt.
Wow. So let me amend your phrase just a little bit. Turn bacteria don't care into viruses don't care.
And, viruses, microbes. Let's say microbes.
Okay, yeah. But so let me get a take for you about whether you see some issues with health disparities in the way that the whole coronavirus issue is being handled.
Absolutely. You know, there's a good quote that a journalist named Ann Applebaum has that says that epidemics reveal the truth about the societies they impact. And when people are underinsured or uninsured, then they will not be going to the doctor if they start having symptoms of the coronavirus, which is, in general, for all illnesses, people wait till they get really, really sick, and then, of course, it costs the system a whole lot more.
And Susan Rogers, that's exactly what you were talking about, too, that poorer people tend to wait longer, and then they're sicker. And so we get the situation that we have that's just exacerbated by the fact that people are poor, not covered by health insurance, and we have this potential epidemic.
Exactly. And when you have people who cannot access care, regular influenza, which is what we usually worry about this time of year, but now that we have a coronavirus, that's sort of taken the headlines. But there is medication for that that often people cannot afford, the Tamiflu. And one of the things addressing this epidemic now with coronavirus is that if there is a vaccine, we have to push to make it available to everyone, and it should not be only for those who can pay. Testing should be for everyone who has symptoms, not just for those who pay. So that treating everyone, like was already stated, it has to be for everyone. Otherwise, everyone is at risk. And I like to use the example that when you go out to a restaurant, you want who's ever cooking your food to be healthy. You don't want them to be sick and coughing or whatever on your food. So it is to everyone's benefit, regardless of their socioeconomic or ethnic background, to be healthy.
Healthcare, race relations, civil rights, Medicare, all topics on the table here on the Jefferson Exchange. We talked to Dr. Susan Rogers, who is the president-elect of PNHP, Physicians for National Health Program. She'll take office in 2021. She is a retired internist in Chicago. We also have with us Dr. Corinne Frugoni, who's a physician in Humboldt Bay. They'll be together at the Arcata Minor Theater on Saturday at 11 with the screening of The Power to Heal, Medicare and the Civil Rights Revolution. You can join the conversation about these topics now on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I did call up some numbers from AARP just to follow up the number about Medicare currently. 44 million beneficiaries, says AARP. That's about 15% of the American population. Enrollment expected to rise to 79 million by 2030. That's assuming Medicare stays untouched. But what you're pushing for at PNHP is Medicare for all. And would it essentially eliminate, is it like the Bernie Sanders plan we've been talking about, where there would be no more private insurance, or that would only be supplemental to Medicare?
There is a space for private insurance, but only for non-medically needed services. So the Medicare for All bill covers, it's amazing what it covers. It covers hospitals, doctors, medications, vision, hearing, mental health, substance abuse, and some evidence-based complementary medicine. But if you want a fancy room in a hospital with a view, or you want some cosmetic surgery that really is only for cosmetic and not for health, then there's that small little space for private insurances to cover those services. However, overall, the benefit package will be so good that most people will not need to pay extra, because as long as we have a two-tier system, some people will do better than others. So the whole idea of Medicare for All is it is for all. As I've said before, everyone in, no one out, and everyone has access to high-quality care.
Susan Rogers, a couple of things that come up here, though. You get the discussion about money and commentators emphasizing the T in trillion in what Medicare for All would cost. Of course, they're stretching it over 10 years, but it would be, I think, more than a trillion a year anyway. There's the whole Karl Marx boogeyman about socialized medicine, the idea that I won't get to pick my doctor anymore. You got a lot of things to counter there just in pushing this forward, don't you?
Well, those are really based on myths. I'll address a couple things that you said. For one, it will save money. We spend a horrendous amount of money on bureaucracy and administration. And keep in mind that insurance companies do not provide help. They are only a liaison between the patient and the provider. And they're just a way that the provider gets paid, but they create obstacles, they create bureaucracy, they just increase the complexity of the system. The other thing is that everybody has different coverage. Every plan is different, so you don't even know what you're covered for. And people talk about wanting to choose. Right now, you have no choice. If you are employed, you choose what your provider, what your employer offers to you. You don't get to choose your doctor other than whatever is in the network. Whereas Medicare for All, everybody has the same benefits that cover all medically needed services. And you get to choose your doctor. If you want to see a doctor in California or New York, you can go to either one. Everybody can go to wherever they want. And this is how we can equalize care. The other thing, too, is this is not socialized medicine at all. And, you know, this framing of it has really given it a bad name. But when you look at socialism by definition, it's a government-run program by government employees in government buildings. That's really what the VA is. But what Medicare for All would be is a government-funded system but privately delivered. You'd have private doctors, you'd have, you know, private institutions where you would get your care. So it is not a socialist system at all. We don't look at public education as socialized, and we see what's happened is that we now have two-tiered systems with education. People who can pay more get better schools, but this would equalize the care everywhere.
Corinne Fregoni, when you look at what Medicare for All could do as currently outlined, how would it change family practice for you in Eureka? I mean, would you see different people? Would you get paid differently? Would procedures be different?
Most likely, yes, because it's actually improved Medicare for All. There would be an emphasis on prevention, which means a big place for primary care. And there would also be some planning so that if there'll be some studies of where care is needed, where providers are needed, and so there would be impetus and provisions made to encourage doctors and other allied health professionals to come to areas where there is a need, and also to boost the financial protection of rural hospitals, which are closing right and left, which is also happening everywhere in the rural areas in the United States.
Yeah, 19 closed last year. We had a report on that earlier in this week.
And we have one that's really struggling right now in Humboldt County.
Which one is that?
It's Mad River Hospital.
Okay, and that is one of the ones where you have admitting privileges, right?
Yes.
So what do you make of that? I mean, you probably had to talk with patients about this because I'm sure they ask you from time to time about things like, well, what about government takeover and all that stuff?
Well, not only patients, but a lot of doctors, unfortunately, think that way, too. As Susan mentioned, there will be actually less interference because the government will provide the social insurance. Just it will simplify the whole system and pay for the medical care. But there will be less interference because right now physicians have to deal with patients have to deal with networks where only certain doctors are included in the care that's provided, and under single payer, there's no network. It's just one whole network. The whole nation is in the same network. There won't be any surprise billing. There won't be any balanced billing, which a lot of patients are struggling with right now, and co-pays and deductibles, that will all be gone. So the whole system gets simplified, and the doctor can actually see the patient in the room without having to figure out what kind of drugs are on the formulary, what is covered, what isn't, what can be included in that health visit. There will be probably more autonomy for physicians, because right now there's hardly any private practices in Humboldt County, less than on one hand. And it's because it's so hard to run a private practice. There's just too much business involved. And frankly, I went to medical school to learn medicine. I didn't go to medical school to learn business. So this would open the way for a much more diversity delivery of health care.
So, Susan Rogers, you will become president of Physicians for a National Health Program in 2021 when there'll be a new Congress and possibly a new president and possibly a whole a bag of things coming your way. I mean, you're going to have, if you're really going to, if Medicare for All becomes something that is going to be talked about in the next Congress by the next president, we're going to be talking about things like insurance companies potentially making less money, a lot less. Pharmaceutical companies could make less. These are big and powerful players to face.
Well, we have to remember that insurance companies and pharma make tremendous amounts of money without providing care. If you look at insulin, the cost of insulin has been in the news lately. You know, it was developed back in the 50s. The researchers who developed it didn't even patent it to make money. They patented it, I think, for a dollar or something. So that what they're doing now is taking these drugs and just charging more and more and more. They say it's for R&D, but they recoup their money, you know, 100-fold almost on things. So that there's a lot of money that is just going to profit of people who are not delivering care at all. So that this would just change the dynamics. And yes, insurance companies will not be selling health insurance much anymore, but they're diverse. They will be okay. And a lot of the people who work there can find jobs within the healthcare system. Many of them are already doing things affiliated with health, and they can find jobs, and there will be some retraining that's been proposed in the bill so that they will adjust. I don't think it will actually create as big a problem as people foresee at all. And one of the biggest things, though, is that with Medicare for All, we can finally put services where they're needed and not where they make money. Right now, we can have a place in, you know, in Chicago, there's the Illinois Medical District. We've got, you know, five hospitals within a square mile. And then a mile away, there is absolutely nothing. And so we've got these medical deserts and these inequities that are just inappropriate. And it's almost like a fire department. I like this analogy, but
Susan, we're gonna have to cut it off there because we're just about out of time. I want to remind people before we go that we're talking about The Power to Heal, Medicare and the Civil Rights Revolution, a one-hour documentary screening at Saturday at 11 at Arcata's Minor Theater, brought in by Black Humboldt Healthcare for All California and Physicians for National Health Program. Thanks to Corinne Fregoni and Susan Rogers.